All right, let's go ahead and get started. I think we're right on the dot now. Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody, to the talk. This is my first time at GDC, but it's actually not my first time in San Francisco. I used to live here way back in the last century. So I love any opportunity I can get to come to this city because it's one of my favorite places. So show of hands, if I were to ask you if you're probably primary pastime is playing games. I'm going to guess, though I probably can't see you, that a majority of them of you guys are going to raise your hands. And if I say probably your second favorite activity, it's more than likely watching other people play games, followed closely by playing more games with friends. Now, what if you couldn't actually play games? What if you couldn't tell the difference between your opponent or your teammate? Or what if you were trying to coordinate a raid with your friends, but you had no ability to hear them talk strategy to figure out what you're going to do next in the game? That would probably be pretty tragic, right? Hi, my name's Evelyn, and I work for Xbox, specifically in the area of accessibility around building accessible experiences and components for the platform and for game developers. My main focus is accessibility. I've been at Xbox for 6 years working on a variety of features, but over the past 4 years, it's been largely in this area. So when I came to Xbox 6 years ago, as is pretty commonplace, when I met my new manager, he asked me, what's my gamer score? I said, it's 160. And he said, wow, 160,000? That's respectable. I said, no, forget the zeros, 160. To that, he responded, what the bleep are you doing at Xbox? And I said, I'm building consoles for people like me and experiences for people like me. See, I've got a limitation that prevents me from being able to play games to the fullest, and so I am passionate about providing developer tools and capabilities within our platform and making our platform more accessible for everybody. So let's see here. People that are actually using our product, our customers, are a wide range of individuals. And what I'm hoping you're going to get out of this talk today is the why and the what and the how you can build for this audience. So why should you invest in making accessible games? What do gamers with disabilities prefer and ask that you include in your titles? And then what's Microsoft doing to kind of reduce that developer speed bump and provide guidance to help you in your efforts to actually make accessible content for our gamers? So why should you consider building accessible content? When games are developed, we oftentimes build and design our products with this unconscious bias. We develop for that stereotypical gamer, and often, unconsciously and unintentionally, we build just for ourselves. But there is a broad spectrum of gamers with unique needs, and when you develop for those abilities in mind, it leads to a mountain of happy gamers, and it makes Xbox a really great place to have fun. So when I say the word ability, some of you might be asking, what do I mean by that? Well, Webster's defines ability as the power or skill to do something. Now, I understand you're probably thinking, there are a lot of people out there with a wide range of abilities. How can I possibly build my content for everyone? Though gamers' abilities exist across a wide spectrum, there are largely five categories of solutions that you can apply when you're building your title that actually open up games for a large percentage of the audience. The first is building for vision. This would be people with limited or no sight, with visual occlusions, with color deficiencies like color blindness. The next would be hearing. This would be low or no hearing, somebody that couldn't benefit from amplification or can't hear out of one ear or the other or is missing a whole spectrum of hearing. The next is mobility. This is limited manual dexterity, limited strength and reach, someone with a prosthetic or missing a limb or the inability to use that limb effectively, and also time-dependent control, someone that can't actually interact with something quickly and they need a little bit more time to make that happen. Speech, this is nonverbal, people that have an inability to speak, or indistinguishable speech, and then cognitive. This is a spectrum. This could be flashing content sensitivity. It could be language disabilities such as dyslexia or neural diversity, and cognitive and learning disabilities. And all these gamers want to play your games. So I would expect that if I were to take a poll of the people in the audience, that if you think about people that you work with on a daily basis or people you associate with, your friends, your family, your coworkers, I bet that most of you actually know someone in your personal life that has a disability. Well, it's a great big audience of people. 285 million people in the world are blind or no vision. 9.9% of people in the United States, that's 19.5 million people, have some form of a disability. Of school-aged children between the age of 5 and 17, 6.3% of those school-aged children, that target market of gamers, actually has some form of disability, the majority of that landing in the cognitive difficulties or disability area. For military, over 25% of people in the military have some form of a disability. And in the U.S. alone, 25,000 people a year permanently lose the use of an appendage. And 3 million people in the U.S. use a wheelchair. Sometimes disability is not just as a result of an accident or a condition at birth. It's a natural result of aging. I personally need these to actually be able to play games like Destiny, where that text is really tiny. Prevalence of age-related vision-related disabilities are 36 million people. It's a pretty significant number. So when you look at that number, you're probably thinking, whoa, that number seems pretty high. But take into consideration that a disproportionate number of people that actually play games have some form of a disability. It's a vital social outlet for them. It gives them the ability to engage with other people. It gives them a chance to step outside of themselves and be whoever they want to be when they're playing. It just gives them the freedom to just play and have fun. And those gamers are very vocal. In the past several years, they've been very, very vocal with developers and with Xbox directly, telling us what they want. And it used to be that when a title would implement something like closed captioning as a feature, the title was elevated up and praised by people with by gamers with disabilities. But these days, those kind of features are actually expected. And that table is tipped, and now they're very vocal when titles don't include those capabilities. There are sites out there that are dedicated to rating the accessibility of games. There are social groups, social network groups out there that are geared towards gamers with disabilities. There's Twitter and subreddits where common conversations around accessible gaming and capabilities and titles are commonly discussed topics. And gamers actually vote with their wallet. If your title doesn't include what they need to actually be able to play that content, they're going elsewhere and they're spending their money on somebody else's title. So it's an opportunity for you. So I've given you context on this very eager audience to get their hands on your games. So let's talk a little bit about what gamers have requested. I'm going to say this is not a comprehensive list. This is a collection of features that people and functionalities that people have requested of us and that we've heard that they want to see in their games, and it helps to reduce that barrier, but by no means is this all there is. So to help unlock gamers, Xbox has actually assembled a suite of accessibility capabilities over the course of the past several years, and we've also created some design guidelines and some recommendations on how to build content for this diverse audience. First thing we're going to focus on is alternatives for hearing. So as of January, the Xbox SDK and Live SDK have actually updated the chat APIs, and game developers can now leverage a first-gen speech-to-text capability within the title. So, gamers who want this capability can turn it on via the settings on the Xbox console, or they can also turn it on through the Xbox app in the accessibility settings. And when it's enabled, In a multiplayer gaming session, all the voice utterances of everyone that's participating in the party will actually have their voice captured and sent to a transcription service, and then sent back down to the title and rendered in a text chat window. Now, that text chat window can actually live over the top of the game using a component that Xbox has built, a conversation window overlay, or titles can actually implement this conversation window directly into their game UI to have it style and match their styling of their title. So let me give you a quick overview of this window. What I'm gonna show you is an example of what the overlay looks like, how we've built it, but it actually reflects the developer guidelines that we've given to, that we placed on our developer portal, and there are some sample code up there as well so that it makes it easier for you to implement it if you decide you wanna put it directly into your title. The window's made up of four components. There's a conversation frame that's rendered at 324 pixels high by 375 wide. Most recent conversation appears at the bottom of the conversation overlay. Oh, sorry, back up one. You probably didn't notice there. It's a little bit difficult to see in this room. But the background of the overlay is at 75% black color. And then when high contrast is on the console, it actually renders it to no transparency at all. So it's solid black. Conversations, most recent ones, are at the bottom of the overlay, and they roll up off the top, least recent at the top. And it's made up of several components within the overlay itself. This is an iconography that represents the source of that bit of information that you're gonna see in the window. This is coming from either voice or from text, and it's represented with a headset for voice and a keyboard for text-based input. The second piece is actually the source. This is typically the gamer tag. This is the person whose voice is being transcribed and converted and placed into the window. And the last is the message body itself. And this message body is what is being uttered by the person that's actually talking in the game. It's roughly about 260 pixels that'll show up on the screen at any given time. And if the game is particularly chatty, things are gonna scroll off the screen relatively quickly. So the platform actually has the overlay dismiss after 15 seconds of inactivity so that that doesn't obscure gameplay if it's not a terribly chatty conversation. And that window actually stays on the screen until some other element might obscure it, such as a title callable UI, a guide coming over the side of the sidebar for those familiar with Xbox, Cortana window coming up. It actually suppresses it. When those things go away, it's visible again. It also goes away if you place the title into constrained mode. Say the gamer goes back to home. The game's still in memory. It's not killed completely, but when the game starts back up again, that conversation window starts. But just like in the real world, if the conversation is happening while they're gone, that message is not preserved. You're not gonna have a history. They're not gonna be able to see what previously happened, like if you went into the kitchen to grab a sandwich and came back and missed the game audio. On the PC, it's a similar experience. We have an overlay that's available on the PC. It is rendered over the top of the game, or just like that, you can, like I mentioned before, you can actually have that rendered yourself in your game UI. And if the game is killed, obviously the conversation window goes away. Or on PC, if, for example, a gamer has two games that are playing at the same time, they have a conversation window going in one game, they actually go and give focus to that second game, that first conversation window is killed. When they go back to that first game, it's basically starting that conversation over again. Again, no history preserved. So let's talk a little bit about the overlay itself. So the position of the overlay is determined by the title. They can decide where is the most appropriate place to put it. For the console rendered overlay, the one that the game can call into and just have it show over the top of the game, they can decide they can put it in one of eight positions in an overlay on the screen. And they can choose to actually move that overlay to where they think is the more appropriate thing so that it's not obscuring gameplay and least destructive to what's going on the title. And then depending on where the game is decided to put it, if the gamer decides that they're going to pop the virtual keyboard up on the screen, we render on behalf of the game, we take care of it, and we just reposition that UI so that it's not actually obscured. The gamer will still be able to see the message that's happening on the screen. On the PC side, repositioning isn't offered, but the game overlay is actually relative to the screen frame, not to the actual game itself, because games on Windows can be resized to be windowed. But if for some reason the gamer decided they were going to pop up the virtual keyboard on top of their games on a PC, that virtual keyboard is repositional as well as the title itself, and they can move that out of the way so that it's not obscuring gameplay. So we're going to take a quick peek at this in action here. What you're going to see on the left-hand side is the person whose voice is being captured. The person on the left-hand side is the person who actually has the text overlay turned on, and you're going to see the conversation window appearing in that left window. You'll also notice that the person on the left has also popped open a text overlay window as well. That's to represent the second piece that I'm going to be talking about in just a moment, which is the text-to-speech element. And you're going to see that rendered there, but you're not necessarily going to hear that portion of it because that audio is not turned on. So here we go.
Hello. Are you ready to play?
Now, it's important to note that the quality of the transcription experience will depend heavily upon the gamer's environment and any enumeration of sound going around with the speaker when they're talking. And now Jason dies. Oh. All right, so we tried to make the speech-to-text capability as simple as possible for developers. Titles looking to take advantage of this chat solution just need to grab the latest XDK or Live SDK. They need to link in the appropriate chat solution that works best for them. That could either be Game Chat, or it could be the Xbox-integrated multiplayer solution called Zim. Both provide capabilities and expose settings for the developer to query. For those of you that aren't familiar with those terms, they're exposed to developers in ID at Xbox and our managed partners. And if you want to learn more about that, we can talk about that at the lobby bar after the talk. So once you're done with that, you've got Game Chat. Speech to text, you get it for free. Now receiving, also tried to make that relatively lightweight. You listen for an event. We're going to provide events for you. You're going to process that incoming text message. That could either be back up here. We're losing my notes. You can check whether it's coming from speech to text or whether it's a part of the text to speech packet or it's actually just a simple or plain text message that's coming in. Once you're done, you display it. So once you've received that text message, you have to make a determination about where you want to display it. There are a couple options, like I mentioned before. You can simply call the title callable rendered UI, our conversation window that platform provides, or you can build your own custom solution within your game. There are some advantages and disadvantages to both options. If you actually leverage the platform solution, it reduces your development cost up front, makes it easier for you to just snap it in and you're good to go. But it is a one-size-fits-all solution. It actually doesn't take account for the level of complexity and gameplay that might be going on in your title. So there's a possibility that it might end up obscuring over the top of an area of your game that's important for the gamer to see. Also, it's not as flexible as it could be if you built it in yourself, because we only offer that 8-position location UI. You could choose to put it anywhere you'd like otherwise. Now, if you choose to build a custom solution, it does increase your development costs, obviously, up front. You've got to build that UI into your game. But the benefits are that you really do have a lot of flexibility in how you want to render it, when you want to show the information to the user. It can be reactive and adaptive to how chat is happening in the title. You can place it in positions that are more appropriate for your gameplay. And on top of that, it actually, if you're building for both platforms, both Windows and Xbox, it offers you an opportunity to have consistency in your game UI across both. So the next one we're going to talk about is an alternative for speech. This is, I alluded to this a few minutes ago, but this is another platform component, another platform API, that actually sends synthesized voice through chat for originating users that type text. So if a user types text on the screen, either by calling our virtual keyboard that you see there, or by actually rendering a text window within your game itself, that audio is actually turned into synthesized voice piped through the audio channel. So including this, it's the same thing. You pick up the XDK or the live SDK, and in order for the gamer to send the synthesized stream, you first have to check the setting to make sure that they have it on. And then once it's on, you want to capture their text input. This can be done, like I said, through your own text UI window on your screen or through calling the virtual keyboard. Something to consider, you want to make sure that it's appropriate for what the gamer is doing. If somebody has that setting on and they're not playing a multiplayer title, maybe it probably doesn't make sense that you render an in-game text UI input field. There's no reason for somebody else to be communicating with them in the game. Once you have text, you call the API, and there is this chat send text API. And then you pass this extra bit to indicate that you want synthesized audio as well as the text. And then for receiving, there's no work involved. It's literally platform takes care of it for you. If you have voice chat, you've got text to speech, we handle that on your behalf, we take the audio, we synthesize it, we pass it along the audio pipeline, and it comes through just like any other audio on the stream, squawker and all. Next is alternative for vision. This is for gamers who are low or no vision. Both low and no vision. And this is a speech synthesis API. Now, some of you may be familiar with this API already. This exists in Windows today. But what we've actually done is we've included it in the XDK and piped this into the ERA space. And so what this does is it makes it possible for you to provide a voiced out solution for elements within the game that are generally only presented visually. An example of that would be menus in your title. You may choose to voice out these menus, or perhaps there's some character in the game or tool or skill that you want to be able to give them more information about that's generally only presented visually. To take advantage of the capability, need to provide a gamer a way to actually turn this on. There is no API that reads a platform setting that tells you whether or not a gamer intends or needs this feature. So you'll need to provide a method to inform them that the capability exists within your game. You can do this by adding it to, say, your menu as an option and have that always voiced out when somebody gives focus to that menu. Whatever you do, whatever solution you implement, it's really important that you make that information available in your game documentation that you publish online, because ultimately the people that need this feature are generally the people that would need it to actually find the setting in your game. So if you form them in advance, let them know where to find it, it makes it easier for them to turn it on within your title. So you'll then call the API. And you'll pass relevant values. Those relevant values are the string value itself, the name, and the language. And by name and language, that it would be, say, Microsoft David and English US. And then platform voices out the string on your behalf. We punch a hole through to our side of the house, we leverage SAPI, and we just speak that voice for you based on the parameters that you've provided. So here's some guidance for when you're going to implement this in your game. Be consistent in how you apply this to your title. By that I mean, don't just voice out one portion of your game UI, like your menus, and not cover the rest of it. Be very confusing for someone. If you're gonna commit to it, make all of your menus readable or voiced out so that someone can easily navigate their way through. Now, for someone that's very low vision or no vision, I suspect that some people in this room are probably thinking, how is somebody actually using this feature? Well, I will tell you right now that there are highly competitive players that are no vision, that play games regularly, and the way they learn about how to do configurations in their games are they go out to the web because somebody's posted the clicks. They said, oh, two clicks down and then press enter, and four clicks down and then press enter, and you've been able to configure something. If you do this, you made a world of difference to them. The next piece is provide context. So when you're giving them information, like say you're talking about a menu item, don't just say on or off. Tell them what they're setting. Makes it a lot easier for them to know what they're going to be doing. Next thing is you're going to want to not try and overload this API. And by that I mean you can use this where you feel it's appropriate to give enough information to the user so they can make an informed decision or be educated about the things that's important for them to play the game. But you don't need to voice out every little thing. Be judicious about it, because you really don't want to interrupt gameplay too terribly much. Which leads to the next piece, which is honestly leveraging the story of your game and the audio in your game as a method to tell your to help gamers out. You don't necessarily have to say there is a person standing in front of you. Make a noise of that person standing in front of you. Or there's a door that closed to your left. Make a closing door sound. It's pretty straightforward. All right, next one is also vision. This is meant for people that have difficulty seeing your UI. We actually put a high contrast API out for developers in fall of last year. And there's documentation on our developer portals. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about the API itself, but there's lots of stuff that you can learn about how to use it. But I'll just go over the high level with you and then provide some best practices for how to actually use it. So when developing a game, consider the following. Query the API. Query the color scheme. So on Xbox, we only support one color theme. It's a dark background with lighter overlays on the top of it. But we actually expose that as part of the SDK, or as part of the API. So you can tell whether or not the user actually wants a darker theme or a lighter theme. On Windows, there's a whole bevy of options available to color options. So query what the color options are set, and then present a relevant contrast-rich UI that's appropriate for those settings. Now, we don't provide any sort of overlay over the top of your game for you. We understand that game developers are very passionate and feel very strongly about what their visual UIs look like, so there's no filter. It's up to you to build the best contrast-rich experience for your gamers. But we're going to provide you some guidelines that may help you make some better decisions about how you actually implement this. So for most people in this room that can see what's on the screen right now, there are two big boxes up there. One is red on the right or the left, and the other is green on the right. Most people can probably see that, but for someone that has contrast deficiencies or inability to distinguish color, like they have red-green color blindness as an example, what they're going to see is more like what's on the screen right now, which is two ever so slightly different in hue boxes. So try not using color as the only method to denote something on the screen. Try introducing a symbol over the top of it or something that graphically represents a difference. Or try introducing a different shape or a different size. That actually helps be able to differentiate between those things. You can still use color, just add an additional indicator. So here's an example. This game's called Hue. When they built this game, as you can see, it's a very contrast-rich UI. It's lots of bright colors, but in most cases, there are a lot of symbols that look exactly the same on the screen, and they have different actions based on their color. So what they did was they actually introduced symbols over the top of those things in the color wheel, in the different elements of the game, so it's much easier for someone to be able to differentiate those elements within the title. Another example is increasing the contrast between elements on the screen. Now, for those of you that can see the screen, you can probably notice that there's something in that corner over there. You might not be able to tell easily what that thing is. But if you boost up the contrast between what's in the foreground and what's in the background, it actually makes it far easier to see the elements that are there. Also, try and provide boundary recs around those elements if they're layered over the top of something else that's equally similar in color, so you can differentiate between those things. The other is visual noise. So a lot of really rich background, a lot of beautiful scenery that people have built into their games, wonderful and gorgeous, but really difficult to distinguish things from front to back. It's probably really difficult for you to see that little hoppy bunny that just showed up over the top of that very contrasty UI. So try bumping down that visual noise a little bit so that there's a much more of a broader contrast between the foreground and background. Example of that would be something like this, where you actually take the street background that would be behind there and suppress it and show a darker theme so that there's a whole lot of contrast between the front and back and the visual noise is reduced. So another option is differentiators. So most people will be pretty able to see when something is text versus something is interactable. But for some people that need a little bit more assistance, try adding some affordances around those things so that people can tell the difference between those two. Makes it easier to say text on the left is actually stuff that tells me about what it is, and text on the right is something that I can actually interact with. Now, of course, your games are super rich UI. Like I said, I fully understand that there's a lot of different permutations in how you can apply better contrast and experiences within your game. But if you take some of these principles in mind when you're actually in the design phase, you'll go a long way towards making a UI that people can actually interact with. So next is a solution for hearing. Closed captioning has been around for a while as well. We actually had it all the way back in the 360 days, but I'm surprised at how many people find that aren't familiar with the fact that we expose this. You guys still hear me? It sounds like the mic cut out for a sec. Okay, great. So we expose this to the ERA, and users can turn the setting on the console. They can do standard default settings or they can do custom settings. And when they do, there are a set of values that are actually exposed. And these values are queryable. So you can query whether or not the high contrast value is on and what the unique settings are. And then you can actually choose to how you want to determine how you want to actually render those in your game. So there's a myriad of solutions that you can apply. You can add them to the bottom of the screen, like you see in this instance. Or in this one, you can add it as a chat bubble over the top of the title. But what's really important is that you actually match the gamer preferences, that you check formatting, in case they each time they load the game, they may have changed their contrast set or their closed caption settings. And caption all dialogue. Don't just caption cutscenes. Gamers really want all of the dialogue in the game and all of the elements that are important for them to know about captions so that they can immerse themselves into the title. Which is the last piece of that, which is provide alternates to sound. So the scenario that I mentioned earlier about providing audio when you have a visual-only representation, the flip side of that also applies. Provide visuals when you provide only an audio solution. So you've got a creaky door that's happening off screen. Somebody who can't hear doesn't know a creaky door just happened. So perhaps shine a little light on when the door opens in the right-hand corner so that they have an indication that something's going on off screen. Or somebody's stomping around behind them and running really fast, rumble the controller or provide some other method of informing them that some action's about to affect them. All right, so we'll talk a little bit about mobility. This is gamers with limited strength and reach, like I mentioned before, or limited prosthetics. We actually have introduced a controller button remapping experience on the console for standard controllers. We did that about a year and a half ago. And this is the controller that ships with most people's title or with most people's consoles. We offer this standard controller remapping, but a limitation to this is that it's defined for a single controller and a single profile. So if a gamer plays a lot of games on a regular basis, they're going to have to actually go into our settings and change it for each game they play. So the recommendation is that you actually provide title-specific controller button remapping, because each game is unique and there are specific controls in that title. By doing that, it makes it so the gamer doesn't have to spend a lot of time in setup before they actually can jump in and start playing your game. Support multiple save mappings. People like to play games in a variety of different ways, and they may try to play it in easy mode where there are capabilities that aren't exposed in the hard mode, and now they start playing in the hard mode, and now they have to do controller button remapping all over again. So save those settings twice, or two different versions of those settings, so that somebody on a single profile can switch easily between those button mapping. Be flexible in your button mapping. You may find that a gamer may really need to be able to map all A, B, X, Y to a single action because they place their controller down on a countertop as opposed to holding it in their hand. So give them that level of flexibility in how they can bind elements or actions to certain controls on the controller. And then offer gesture mapping. Now, by that I mean give them the ability to were things that have complex actions in a game that require a whole bunch of button presses and combinations, give them the ability to actually have something that they can map to a single action on the controller to make it easier for them to take that action. The last one we're going to talk about is customized game mechanics. So you want to really consider adding adaptive and customizable mechanics to your title. Gamers with cognitive disabilities like dyslexia or ADHD or autism benefit greatly from titles that allow them to customize the title to their specific needs and style of gameplay. And to ensure you make the game approachable, applying these principles in the design phase of your development of the title will really go a long way to making the game playable. So consider an easy mode. It seems like a pretty simple thing to say, but not all titles do this, actually. Provide a way where you're offering a helper function. An example of that would be in a racing game where perhaps you're offering a line that directs the user as to how they should drive the course, where you show a different color or bandwidth of those little bars on the screen to tell them they need to slow down when they're coming to a corner, or, you know, not go off the road, that sort of thing. Simplify game mechanic options. So this would be things like providing guardrails so that somebody can just play the game, and though they may not necessarily be able to have fine motor skills to be able to stay on course, they can still play the game because they can slide on a guardrail and get to the end. Reduce the amount of damage that gets done to somebody when they get hit because they can't react to them that quickly, or because they can't avoid attacks. Provide a helper mode. Provide a little squawker over somebody's shoulder to give them a little guidance if it looks like they're repeating something over and over in a title. Be adaptive in how you're responding to a game or playing your title. You don't necessarily have to solve something for them, but give them a little help to let them know how they can complete that particularly difficult part of the game. Adaptive settings, like I was mentioning. Give them a mode that has cues on how to play the game, and slow down the action maybe a little bit if somebody just keeps repeating a section over and over again. Think of this kind of like Matrix mode, slows down a little bit. And allow difficulty settings to be adjusted real time so somebody can go in and just dial something down without having to go back and start the game from ground zero all over again. And lastly, provide them an out. Sometimes game mechanics in a title are just not possible to complete. So give them an opportunity to actually skip a section within the game. You may not give them an achievement for that section because they didn't complete all the activities that are required to get through that particular area, But ultimately, gamers want to be able to feel a sense of accomplishment and complete the game itself, so give them a chance to do that. At the end of the day, gamers are playing because they want to be entertained, they want to be engaged, they want to feel that sense of accomplishment. And you can go a long way towards winning the hearts of gamers by actually providing a title that understands their unique needs and ways of playing and gives them a feeling that you're actually building a title that's custom tailored for them. Xbox should be a place for everybody to have fun, and you have a really great opportunity to actually build titles to help out people that really want to get their hands on your games. So that's my talk today. We're going to be available at the lobby bar after this if any of you have questions specifically about any of the APIs that we've exposed or any of the guidelines that we've offered during this presentation. Thanks, everybody.